Chapter 9. The Stuff Males Are Made Of. Every dog needs a good veterinarian. Every new dog owner needs one too, mostly for the advice and reassurance. Jay Butan, Dr. Jay to all who knew him, was young, smart, hip, and extraordinarily kind. Now, on this afternoon, Jenny and I stood in an exam room with him discussing Marley's deepening neurosis over thunderstorms. We had hoped the chipper shredder incident in the garage was an isolated aberration, but it turned out to be just the beginning of what would become a lifelong pattern of phobic, irrational behavior. Even the hint of a storm would throw Marley into a meltdown. If we were home, he would press against us, shaking and drooling uncontrollably, his eyes darting nervously, ears folded back, tail tucked between his legs. When he was alone, he turned destructive, gouging away at whatever stood between him and perceived safety. Dr. J pressed a vial of small yellow pills into my hand and said, "Don't hesitate to use these." They were sedatives that would, as he put it, take the edge off Marley's anxiety. The hope, he said, was that, aided by the calming effect of the drug, Marley would be able to more rationally cope with storms and eventually realize they were nothing but a lot of harmless noise. Dr. J scruffed Marley's neck. "And you probably want to start thinking seriously about having him neutered." "Neutered?" I repeated. "You mean as in..." I looked down at the enormous set of testicles, comically huge orbs, swinging between Marley's hind legs. Dr. J gazed down at them too, and nodded. Lately, Marley, who was 7 months old, had begun humping anything that moved, including our dinner guest. "It'll just remove all that nervous sexual energy and make him a happier, calmer dog," he said. He promised it wouldn't dampen Marley's sunny exuberance. "I don't know. What about siring a litter?" Again, Dr. J seemed to be choosing his words carefully. "I think you need to be realistic about that," he said. "Marley's a great family pet, but I'm not sure he's got the credentials he would need to be in demand for stud." He was being as diplomatic as possible, but the expression on his face gave him away. It almost screamed out, "Good God, man! For the sake of future generations, we must contain this genetic mistake at all costs!" I told him we would think about it, and with our new supply of mood-altering drugs in hand, we headed home. It was at the same time as we debated slicing away Marley's manhood that Jenny was placing unprecedented demands on mine. Dr. Sherman had cleared her to try to get pregnant again. The days of simply putting away the birth control pills and letting whatever might happen happen were behind us. In the insemination wars, Jenny was going on the offensive. For that, she needed me, a key ally, who controlled the flow of ammunition. Like most males, I had spent every waking moment from the age of 15 trying to convince the opposite sex that I was a worthy mating partner. Finally, I had someone who agreed. I should have been thrilled. For the first time in my life, a woman wanted me more than I wanted her. But suddenly, it was not a rollicking good romp that Jenny craved for me. It was a baby. That most joyous of acts overnight became a clinical drill involving basal temperature checks, menstrual calendars, and ovulation charts. It was all about as arousing as a tax audit. I would be, let's say, fixing the garbage disposal, and she would walk in with her calendar in hand and say, "I had my last period on the 17th, which means..." And she would pause to count ahead from that date. "That we need to do it... now!" One morning when I was working in my newspaper's West Palm Beach bureau, just 10 minutes from home, Jenny called from work. Did I want to meet her at home for lunch? Then she added, "Today's a good day. I think I'm ovulating." A wave of dread washed over me. Oh, God, no. Not the O word. The pressure was on. It was time to perform or perish. to quite literally rise or fall. "Please don't make me," I wanted to plead into the phone. Instead, I said as coolly as I could, "Sure, does 12:30 work?" When I opened the front door, Marley, as always, was there to greet me, but Jenny was nowhere to be found. I called out to her. "In the bathroom," she answered. "Out in a sec." I sorted through the mail, killing time, a general sense of doom hovering over me, the way I imagined it hovered over people waiting for their biopsy results. "Hey there, sailor," a voice behind me said. And when I turned around, Jenny was standing there, in a little silky two-piece thing. Her flat stomach peeked out from below the top, which hung precariously from her shoulders by two impossibly thin straps. Her legs had never looked longer. "How do I look?" she said, holding her hands out at her sides. She looked incredible. That's how she looked. I could tell she felt silly in this seductive getup, but it was having the intended effect. She scampered into the bedroom with me in pursuit. Soon we were on top of the sheets in each other's arms. I closed my eyes and could feel that old lost friend of mine stirring. The magic was returning. My fingers fumbled for those flimsy shoulder straps. I could feel her breath now, hot and moist on my face, and heavy. Hot, moist, heavy breath. Sexy. But wait, what was that smell? Something on her breath. Something at once familiar and foreign, not exactly unpleasant, but not quite enticing either. I almost had it. It was milk bones? Yes, milk bones. That was it. But why has Jenny been eating milk bones? And besides, I could feel her lips on my neck. How could she be kissing my neck and breathing in my face all at once? It didn't make any... Oh, my God. I opened my eyes. There, inches from my face, filling my entire frame of vision, loomed Marley's huge head. He was panning up a storm, drool soaking into the sheets. His eyes were half closed, and he looked entirely too in love. "Bad dog!" I shrieked, recoiling across the bed. "No! No! Go to bed!" It was too late. The magic was gone. The next morning, I made an appointment to take Marley in to have his balls cut off. I figured if I wasn't going to have sex for the rest of my life, he wasn't either. Dr. J said we could drop Marley off before we went to work and pick him up on our way home. A week later, that's just what we did. As Jenny and I got ready, Marley caromed happily off the walls, sensing an impending outing. For Marley, any trip was a good trip. It didn't matter where we were going or for how long. Take out the trash? No problem. Walk to the corner for a gallon of milk? Count me in. I began to feel pangs of guilt. He trusted us to do the right thing, and here we were, secretly plotting to emasculate him. And I felt even worse when I whistled for him and he bounded out the door and into the car with utter blind faith that I would not steer him wrong. Jenny drove, and I sat in the passenger seat. Marley was riding shotgun with his two best friends. Did life get any better than this? I cracked my window, and soon he had squirmed his way fully onto my lap and pressed his nose firmly into the narrow crack of the window. Oh, why not, I thought. This was his last ride as a fully equipped member of the male gender. He was enjoying the sensation so much, I opened the window farther, and soon his entire head was out. His ears flapped behind him in the wind, and his tongue hung out like he was drunk on the ether of the city. God, was he happy. As we drove down Dixie Highway, I noticed, more with curiosity than alarm, that Marley had hooked both of his front paws over the edge of the half-open window. And now his neck and upper shoulders were hanging out of the car, too. He just needed a pair of goggles and a silk scarf to look like one of those World War I flying aces. "John," He's making me nervous. He's fine. He just wants a little fresh. At that instant, he slid his front legs out the window until his armpits were resting on the edge of the glass. John, grab him! Grab him! Before I could do anything, Marley was off my lap and scrambling out the window of our moving car. His butt was up in the air, his hind legs clawing for a foothold. He was making his break. As his body slithered past me, I lunged for him and managed to grab the end of his tail with my left hand. Jenny was braking hard in heavy traffic. Marley dangled fully outside the moving car, suspended upside down by his tail, which I had by the most tenuous of grips. My body was twisted around in a position that didn't allow me to get my other hand on him. Marley was frantically trotting along with his front paws on the pavement. Jenny got the car stopped in the outside lane with cars lining up behind us, horns blaring. "Now what?" I yelled. I was stuck. I couldn't pull him back in the window. I couldn't open the door. I couldn't get my other arm out. And I didn't dare let go of him, or he would surely dash in the path of one of the angry drivers swerving around us. I held on for dear life, my face scrunched against the glass, just inches from his giant, flapping scrotum. Jenny put the flashers on and ran around to my side, where she grabbed him and held him by the collar until I could get out and help her wrestle him back into the car. Our little drama had unfolded directly in front of a gas station, and as Jenny got the car back into gear, I looked over to see that all the mechanics had come out to take in the show. I thought they were going to wet themselves, they were laughing so hard. "Thanks, guys," I called out. "Glad we could brighten your morning." When we got to the clinic, I walked Marley in on a tight leash, just in case he tried any more smart moves. My guilt was gone, my resolve hardened. In the waiting area, he was able to terrorize a couple of cats and tip over a stand filled with pamphlets. I turned him over to Dr. J's assistant and said, "Give him the works." That night, when I picked him up, Marley was a changed dog. He was sore from the surgery and moved gingerly. His eyes were bloodshot and droopy from the anesthesia, and he was still groggy. And where those magnificent crown jewels of his had swung so proudly, there was nothing. Just a small, shriveled flap of skin. The irrepressible Marley bloodline had officially and forever come to an end.